All right, everybody, you didn't miss the opening hour of the show. I was trying to ease Lindsay through it. Now I'm having fun at her expense.
It's going fine.
Hour two of the Lake Show here on the Good Neighbor News Talk 830 WCCO. Matthew Collar, the Purple Insider himself, getting ready to join us here on the show, courtesy of the John Schuster Coal Banker Hotline. Matthew Collar, you staying warm?
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't had anywhere to go, no airport to travel out to Philadelphia for a playoff game or anything like that. So,
oh, you could have went to, like, Hockey Day week. I mean, we got Hockey Day Minnesota is Saturday, and we had Heather Rule on, like, 30 minutes ago, and she's out in Shakopee, you know, braving the cold.
Okay, well, you know, that's great. That's great. But I've mostly just been I spent all last weekend just watching everybody else's team play football. So, you know, that's how it is.
How much does that irritate you that your team didn't advance?
Well, you know, I didn't play, so it's, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, as I was it's very, you know, startling to go from you start training camp July 23rd or something, and then every single week after that, it's like pedal to the metal, you know, going out to the Vikings facility 5 days a week, going to US Bank Stadium, traveling around. Crazy, you know, they're fighting for the number one seed 1 week, and then 2 weeks later they're not playing anymore. And so I feel like this was the most abrupt end to a Viking season that I've ever covered. Even in when they lost in the NFC Championship in 2017, I mean, how they lost was surprising, but we all knew that we could be going there and the season might be over. I didn't think that there was that great of a chance going after that, you know, Green Bay win, that they were just going to be eliminated in the first round, and that's, you know, that's how it would go. So that part was pretty shocking.
Yeah. All right. Since the Minnesota Vikings are done for the year, we're going to get to a few other issues around the National Football League, if you don't mind. Let's start, though, here in Minnesota. News of the week, Kevin O'Connell, contract extension. Your thoughts on that and what this means for Kwesi?
Well, it sounds like, from what Adam Schefter reported, that Kwesi Doppelmense's extension shouldn't be too far behind, which I think is the right thing to do for the Vikings. I mean, when you look at, first of all, I mean, who hired Kevin O'Connell? That was Kwesi. Yeah. The way that they have managed themselves, I think people don't remember because they're mad that the Vikings lost in the playoffs, that, you know, when you go back to when those guys arrived here, NFL.com did an article ranking all the situations for new coaches. So there were 10 new coaches in that hiring cycle. They only ranked the Vikings sixth. It was not viewed as the best job in the league to take over because you had a expensive aging quarterback, an expensive aging team that had already proven during Mike Zimmer's era that it really couldn't win a whole heck of a lot. And they had to, instead of tearing it all down and tanking because the ownership did not want them to do that, they had to manage their way through a competitive rebuild. And I think we all believed going into the season that it was going to take a lot longer than winning 14 games this year. And instead, boom, they're right there playing for the number one seed in week 18. And how it ended shapes how we feel about it. But when we look at what a great job that is in terms of managing the roster to get it to a point where it could be that competitive and coaching to the point where it could be that competitive. I mean, sometimes I think they would have been better off from the fans' perspective, just winning 9 games and missing the playoffs by a game. And then everyone would have said, well, they're going in the right direction for next year instead of being so disappointed. But that's the bar that they set in a really quick period of time. And then, with Kevin O'Connell, when you have a guy with that leadership acumen, you just don't let him go. I mean, it's so hard to be a coach. Out of those 10 coaches hired in 2022, I believe 7 have been fired already. It's so hard to be a head coach in the NFL, and he's done it with multiple quarterbacks. I mean, this is somebody that you want coaching your team for a very, very long time.
Yeah, we're talking to Matthew Collar, Purple Insider, here on the Lake Show News Talk, 830 WCCO. In the division, Ben Johnson, the former Detroit Lions offensive coordinator, gets the Chicago Bears job. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that one's interesting because it's just so different from what he just came from. He came from, I think, you talk about leadership. Dan Campbell goes to the top of that list in the NFL, somebody who just is an organizer of people and a motivator of people, and all Ben Johnson had to do was call the plays. And when he sent in the plays, he sent them into the best offensive line, the best running back, one of the best receivers, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and said, go ahead, guys, run these plays. And they could execute them because they're awesomely talented in Detroit. I think it's a little different in Chicago. Now Ben Johnson has to figure out how he's going to lead an entire organization, which we've seen Kevin O'Connell make look like it's not that hard, but I promise it is. Ask Matt Eberflus how hard it is to lead the Chicago Bears organization. And then in those plays that you're sending in, was it Jared Goff being a really good quarterback and Jahmyr Gibbs being a great running back? Was it, you know, Penei Sewell and Frank Ragnow up front, or was it that the plays were brilliant? And Jared Goff and Caleb Williams could not be more opposite, right? Jared Goff is just awesome at reading and reacting and getting rid of the football and making smart decisions and just being the driver of an offense, where Caleb Williams looked last year like he had no idea where the football was supposed to go.
Yeah.
Where he was either throwing immediate screens that had been drawn up, or he was just scrambling around and getting himself sacked almost 70 times. I mean, that's an enormous challenge. I know Ben Johnson, of course, I'm sure is excited about Caleb Williams' talent, but the guy can't see the field, I mean, from what we saw last year. So how do you navigate that and try to do a lot of the things that work, but also, you know, understand that Caleb Williams is not going to play football like Jared Goff did? I think it's not the easiest spot to go into, and then you add the pressure to that. It's a fan base who's been through so many bust quarterbacks, so many bust coaches, and they are exhausted of this. And this is the one who was promised the you know, the generational talent or whatever. If it doesn't work out for Ben Johnson, it's going to be really ugly for him.
You know, it's funny, and I agree with you 100%. We oftentimes, in terms of like ESPN, the big outlets, NFL Network, whatever, we oftentimes will talk about the pressure in New York. We talk about Jerry Jones and how about them Cowboys and all this. But like Chicago, that is a very pressure situation in terms of having that job. It's not like a bunch of these other National Football League jobs. Like, there are high expectations there all the time because the fan base is so fanatical. They're so crazy.
I totally agree with you. And they're enormous. It's got to be one of the five biggest fan bases in the nation, I would guess, based on their market size and also the popularity of Chicago, you know, from the 80s. When you look at just Caleb Williams in general, let's say that there was no pressure if you were in Jacksonville or somewhere else where there's just no pressure at all. Would they have really started him the whole season last year, or would it have been more like a Bryce Young thing where they bench him, or maybe just have a kind of a Sam Darnold situation where it's a bridge quarterback until he's ready, or a Drake May? I mean, heck, the Patriots you would think would have a lot of pressure, but they still put in a bridge quarterback and didn't play Drake May right away. And then we saw immediately that Caleb Williams, who was one of the younger players in the entire draft, was not ready to play. And I think that set him back. But Matt Eberflus had to play him. He had no other choice because of the amount of pressure that was on after they drafted him. So, you know, Ben Johnson's got a lot of work to do there. And I'm also just not convinced that, you know, it's the greatest situation with a GM who's already under pressure. I mean, when you're Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell and you're on the same timelines here, I think that's really helpful. So everyone's under pressure when that comes, or everyone gets celebrated when they win. But, you know, now Ryan Poles is on the hot seat, but he just hired a new head coach. So is he going to be adopting a new GM if they don't make the playoffs next year? Like, there's just a lot of questions there still, I think.
Yeah. The other coordinator, defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, he gets the job in New York. That makes some sense because of just his, you know, coming out of the Jets organization. Just your thoughts on him taking that specific job.
Yeah, it's funny about Aaron Glenn because I've never really thought that he was one of the better schematic defensive coordinators in the league, which is funny because, you know, I said that on your show before the Vikings game, and then they came out and played great against the Vikings, and then it all came to fruition against Washington where they got out-schemed by them and outplayed by Washington. But, you know, I actually think that Aaron Glenn might make a better head coach even than he did a coordinator, because you can really see in the way that his players play for him, talk about him, that he's got a lot of those leadership qualities that I think we see in someone like Kevin O'Connell or someone like Dan Campbell. He might be more understated than, you know, those guys who are very, you know, outwardly enthusiastic, but even when he was a player, I remember he had a very distinct air of leadership to him. And I always think of that for head coaches is what a lot of them don't understand is, well, okay, the guy had a top 10 unit, so he gets hired. But the job is not the same. It's so much different. You are in charge of so many different facets of an organization. And Kevin O'Connell has talked about finding that out when he got there. I remember that he had to be told that he had to introduce free agents at press conferences. Like, he just didn't realize that that was now his job. And, I mean, think of all the media and everything else that you got to answer for and all the people that you have to organize. And you have to know that you've got to trust your coordinators and trust the people that work for you to put together the scheme, because you can't just do it all yourself like you did when you were a coordinator. And I think Aaron Glenn understands all of that to a T. So I think he's got a really good chance there. My question, of course, is what they're going to do at quarterback with the Jets. Is it going to be Rodgers again?
Because I think it is. I get the feeling, and I saw a couple of takes from a few people nationally, and I'm starting to lean into, I think Rodgers is probably going to be back there. It just feels like it.
Yeah, that feels to me like 5 or 6 wins. I mean, he just looked he's just done. It's the same thing with Russell Wilson, where it's like, I get it, Russ, you want to keep playing, but this is just bad, dude. Like, it's just not, it's never coming back. And it's never coming back for Rodgers either. And I just think if you're inheriting him, then you don't get to run your organization the way you want to run it as long as Aaron Rodgers is there, because that means he runs it. And it was fine in Green Bay when he was the best player in the world, but he ain't the best player in the world anymore, not even close, as was shown for this year. So that could be very tricky for Aaron Glenn.
Oh, no, he should not roll with him. It just feels like that's going to be where Aaron Rodgers remains. We're talking to Matthew Kyle, the Purple Insider, here on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. Let's get to the games before we let you go. Let's start with the NFC matchup, NFC Championship. Washington going into Philadelphia, who do you like and why?
I think that when it comes down to games like this, the better rosters usually win, and I think Philadelphia has the better top-to-bottom roster. But, man, Jaden Daniels is the great equalizer, because no matter what Detroit tried to do against him or Tampa Bay tried to do against him, he was inevitable. I mean, he just could not be stopped. I have the image in my head of, you know, him scrambling against Tampa Bay and the guy grabbing, only being able to grab his towel and not being able to actually get a hand on him, or the Lions sending a corner blitz and Daniels just being like, oh, you're sending a corner blitz? That's fine. I'll just run for a first down. I mean, he has all those Josh Allen traits, those Lamar Jackson traits, and yet there's something that's even on top of that. There's a calmness and a coolness to him that, I don't know. I mean, that's like Joe Montana. There's not that many quarterbacks that have ever looked that calm out there playing football, and it's so impressive. So he's the equalizer, but you look at, you know, Philly's offensive line, their defensive line, their corners, they are a stacked roster. So I think Philadelphia has the edge there.
Yeah, I agree with you in your assessment of this. I'm actually going to pick Washington in the upset just because I'm concerned about the Jalen Hurts injury.
Yes.
And on top of the Jalen Hurts injury, Washington believes. Like, they believe, they're like, we got this guy. And this guy is Jaden Daniels, and he's a badass. So I'm going to roll with Washington in an upset.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how many books A.J. Brown can read on the sideline, but he's not getting the football. He's just not getting the football. I mean, and if you're not able to throw like that, then that's an equalizer there. But, you know, it kind of comes down to, no one's going to stop Saquon Barkley, but can you prevent 70-yard touchdowns? Like, if they could do that, then they have a chance. Yeah, I mean, I think this one's fairly close. Just Philadelphia's a little bit more talented.
All right, let's go to Buffalo and the Chiefs. The Chiefs are favored in this one by 2 points. They do have the home field advantage. Look, I know you're sentimental, Buffalo and all that good stuff, but how do you see this shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about like Josh Allen and Mahomes, they're so close, right? And every one of these games has been a field goal goes wide right for the Bills, or it's the 13 seconds game where the Bills had it wrapped up, and then somehow Mahomes and Kelce find a way. all of these playoff games have been nail biters, barn burners, whatever you want to say. And I feel like it's going to be the same thing. It's probably the most easily predictable outcome of the week. But, you know, I think Buffalo is a little better right now. I mean, it's not that Kansas City is not great, and they're also well rested. They didn't have that hard of a game against Houston. And before that, I think they didn't play for like 24 days. So they're healthy, they're rested, they got the home field advantage, all these things even it out. But at some point, the all-time great quarterbacks always find a way to break through at some point, right? And I think that Josh Allen's going to do it eventually. Enough swings, enough bites at the apple that it's going to happen. So, I mean, I'm picking Buffalo here, but, I mean, who knows between these two?
Yeah, Kansas City wins this one. And it's only because both quarterbacks, I think, are going to play fine. It's just the home field advantage. That's the only thing I'm going with. I've said this since the midseason. Josh Allen's the MVP. I know that at the very end of the year, everybody was screaming Lamar. I know Lamar surged at the end, but there was nothing that Josh Allen did for him to be like, well, okay, yeah, I've lost the award. If I had a vote, which I do not, I would vote Josh Allen for the MVP. It's something about going to the Arrowhead, man, and being able to walk away from the from an AFC championship and saying that you got it done. Now, it has happened before. Tom Brady, Joe Burrow did it, and Josh Allen, we know, is good enough to do it as well.
Yeah, I think so. And when it comes to that place, it's not like Josh hasn't been there before or played well. I mean, you look at his playoff record, it's just pristine. It's literally Mahomes has been one play better so many times. So, you know, I mean, who really knows that when it comes to this? I also think that there's a big factor of the Bills and their defense being banged up. And you saw once the Ravens settled down in that game, which, you know, Kansas City won't be panicking like the Ravens were at the start of the game. I mean, they were able to move the football every time they wanted to because that Bills defense has a lot of injuries. So that could end up being a huge factor here. And all of a sudden, last week, Travis Kelce decided he was going to start breaking tackles and ripping off 40-yard runs after looking very old in the regular season. So, yeah, I mean, I think this one's as even as it could possibly be.
Yeah. Hey, good stuff, Matthew. Always appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Henry.
All right, take care. That's Matthew Kyler, Purple Insider, joining us here on The Lake Show. All right, let's break. We'll come back. We'll get to Bite of the Night. That's next.